Hello and welcome to the Becoming Lit podcast. I'm your host, Anne Fancy, and I am truly grateful you are here with me today. This podcast is dedicated to having deep and honest, raw and soulful conversations around what it means to be an embodied soul living this messy human existence. We'll dive into storytelling, into asking hard questions, exploring wonders of the universe, and digging into some weird stuff. But the whole point here together is that we look deeply into our own life, into our own truth, into our own soulful alignment, and that we peel away everything that doesn't serve, and we step into exactly who we intend to be, to embody as much light as possible, and to shift and change this world for the better. I'm grateful for your presence here, for all the ways you show up in your life, and of course, for lighting up your own corner of the world.
Hey, before we get to today's episode with my soul sister, Tracy King, who I think you're going to love, I wanted to let you know that I do have another retreat coming up this fall, November 2nd through the 5th. It's a Thursday to a Sunday and is located in my favorite place in the whole world, standing, staring at the big blue water of Lake Michigan. It is an absolutely magical place and magical people come and we hang out and do some woo-woo stuff. Yoga is optional. We're going to focus this session on the idea of release and not so much about releasing, you know, beliefs and all of those things, which of course matter, but learning to lean into having a softer grip with life. We're going to walk through chakras and manifesting and play with crystals and all the other fun woo-woo type things we can do together. We'll have a fire ceremony, cacao ceremony. We will eat together, hang together. You have plenty of time on your own as well if you want it. And it's just a great time in community. So if you have questions or want to learn more or see pictures, go to my website, annfancy.com/retreat. I also am offering coaching now, and keep your eyes peeled for some small group coaching and other events coming up soon. So thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And I'd love to have you on retreat. And I hope you enjoy this interview with the lovely Tracy King. Gritty mystic.
Welcome to my friend from across the water, so to speak, Tracy King. Tracy and I met in our transformational, wait, got to say it right, deep transformational coaching program, right? Isn't that what we call it, right? Deep. I always found that one to be a little bit silly, but here we are. Should I say that? I guess I probably shouldn't, but I just did. It's fine. Hi, Tracy. Welcome.
Hey, it's so good to be with you. I love this so much.
Oh, it's so good to be with you. We showed up together on that Zoom call and I was like, oh, look, we have the same haircut and everything's going to be fine.
Instant friends.
Midwesterners, right? You were born and raised in Michigan.
I was. Yeah, I grew up in West Michigan in the Muskegon area.
Nice. Nice. So we were destined to meet for sure, which I love. So Tracy and I went through that program together, which is a lot of connecting and deep sharing and introspection and digging into your soul, and realized we have a ton in common, including the fact that Tracy has her own podcast. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your podcast real quick?
Yeah, sure. Podcast is called Gritty Mystic, and it's all about self-mastery. It's about tools, tips, and techniques for becoming the most authentic and powerful you. And I have all kinds of practitioners and authors, coaches, healers, all kinds of really cool people, different modalities that, depending on where you are in your journey, may resonate as you continue to on your path of personal growth.
Love it. So how did you get to being, like I like to call it, a little woo-woo or a lot woo-woo? Like, how did you get here? Tell us a little bit about that path.
Ooh, well, once upon a time.
Right. Just, you know.
How far are we back? Are we going to go?
Yeah. Well, as far as it's important.
Yeah. I was born and raised in evangelical Christianity, steeped in that indoctrination. and, you know, all the way through high school, Christian high school and Christian college, and married into it, and, you know, created our life, indoctrinating our own children into this system that I found to be very abusive, contrary, completely a dogma that's really has a rotten foundation. And how I discovered this was the particular denomination that I was a part of didn't permit women leadership, right? No women in seminary. Because the Bible says so. And so I was like, well, I'm curious about the historical cultural context of these scriptures. I want to know what the root words mean. I want to be able to understand on my own how this theology that I've been spoon-fed was created, how it was built, what it's based upon. And the more I dug, the more I realized what bullshit it was based on. And that was really confusing to someone who authentically wanted to experience the divine. This was, I thought, the pathway for me to build that authentic, genuine experience with quote unquote God. Right. And what I realized is this whole thing is basically nonsense built on so many lies. And through therapy was able to have mirrored back to me and to be affirmed and seen that it was actually very abusive, quite abusive, and how that had formed me. I wasn't able to see the abuse because I had been raised in it since birth. I was enculturated into it, into not noticing, how destructive this framework, this institution, and how it, you know, waterfalled and, you know, in, waterfalls into even, you know, the system of marriage, right?
Yeah.
So I got to this point in my life, where it just wasn't tenable anymore. I just like hit this brick wall of, I don't know if I can survive this anymore. This is not working. But I mean, what are my options? I was a stay-home mom. I had zero career. I had zero friends outside of this system that I was in. I had nothing. And so the first thing I did was to allow myself to ask questions. Seems super simple. But when you're in a system like that, you are not allowed to ask questions that could, you know, reveal the truth of things. And so I started asking questions. I started consulting other sources. I realized that there's a larger metaphysical conversation happening and that I actually resonated deeply with it. And so I permitted myself to explore that. And it was definitely a forbidden revolutionary act for me to do that. But it just revealed that I was in the wrong place. And it was okay for me to challenge this belief system. It was okay for me to say, this is not for me.
How old were you?
I was in my mid-30s.
Okay. How old were your kids
I was
then?
In my mid-30s. And a turning point was when my spouse at the time and I were in front of our pastor and an elder of our church, because I had decided that this marriage was not going to work because there's no way that I would be able to transform into who I authentically am within this culture and this framework. And revealing like everything I had endured behind these closed doors, the pastor nodded and then he looked at me and he said, "You stay in this marriage or you're no longer welcome in this church." And I was like, "Oh, okay, I guess I'm saying goodbye to you both."
Yep, peace out.
It was like I walked out of that door, and I can remember walking down the stairs out, you know, from that office of the church and saying, "That's it."
Yep.
They just burned the bridge with me. There's no way someone can reveal such deep heartache, abuse, pain, willingness and wanting to reconcile relationships, but also knowing that this is not working, and then just be told, "Sorry, not valid."
Suck it up, or you lose everything, right?
Or you lose everything. And so it's like, I guess I'm starting over. And I did. I left religion. I left that marriage. I had nothing to go on. Mm-hmm. Nothing, mm-hmm. right? I just knew that in order to survive, if I wanted to live this life, continue being a parent to my children, that this is something that I had to do. And I just had to take the first step and then the next step. And the beautiful thing about when you lean into what you know to be authentically true for yourself, the next step is always available. It always reveals itself.
Yeah.
And I just had to trust that. And so that's how I got to the, you know, this is what I'm describing, what I affectionately call my dumpster fire moment. When I was like, I'm just going to either burn out or I can make a different choice. And I just started to pursue the path of self-mastery and personal spirituality. Mm-hmm. I don't ascribe to a religion or a dogma, but I deeply resonate with hermetics. I resonate with the wisdom of nature. Mm-hmm. I resonate with the fact that we create a reality and that it's just the power that we own as being mm-hmm. part of this beautiful unity consciousness. We've called it magic for a long time, but it's just something that we all possess, abilities that we all possess, and just started studying and learning and talking to people and watching videos and connecting with my own, what I call now my soul self, mm-hmm. and what I perceived at the time to be like a team of guides, but have realized over time, you know, as you progress in your journey of self-mastery, realizing that everything collapses into the one, that mm-hmm. you are indeed an expansive being. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of this wisdom that we have access to that is not so far away, way out there, way far away. It's actually right here within our own stillness. And in my pursuit of that, just learning from this intelligence, receiving this beautiful framework that I use with Gritty Mystic and I use in my work, Align, Allow, Be, that I've used for my own journey, but now teach others, mm-hmm. That aligns perfectly with with the framework of alchemy, of spiritual alchemy, which was a fun realization later. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that until much later. Mm-hmm. I was like, couldn't you have just told me this exists? That one. But isn't that like a beautiful synergy to just like, yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Okay, let's go back up for a second. Self-mastery, what does that mean to you? Mm. Nothing like interrupting my own podcast with a little plug for my fall retreat. It is coming up quickly here, November 2nd through the 5th. There was a little date change due to some logistics and making it more accessible for everyone. Go check out more info on my website at ianfancy.com/retreat, or feel free to reach out with any questions you might have. They do fill up, and I would love to have you there this fall or sometime in the future. Okay, back to the recording. Thanks, guys.
To me, self-mastery is doing what I have to do to release what is not for me, to release what limits me in the pursuit of aligning with what's most authentic, mm-hmm. with my authentic expression, with mm-hmm. the truth of who I am and who I came to, capital B, be mm-hmm. In this life. And it means that I weigh all of the different ways, practices, programs, relationships that can help me maintain that alignment so that I can grow closer and closer to that authentic expression against those that I need to release. And maybe mm-hmm. there's some things that serve for a time and then, you know, it's time to let go and open way for something new. And so, you know, it's not about perfection whatsoever, mm-hmm. because perfection is not the goal. That perfection is not possible in this framework that we're living in, this life. But it is possible for us to master the beautiful gifts that we've been given of thought and the data we receive through our emotions to make the most informed and intelligent decisions that allow us to become more fully who we are, dilating wider to that soul self perspective, that mm-hmm. we can then live from that perspective. But there's a lot that we have to refine in the process of getting to that place where we can embody that perspective. And that is the work of self-mastery to me.
So what's been the hardest for you to release, and how are you doing it? What's been helpful for you? How have you moved through this?
Well, as you know, when we're talking about releasing, often that is part of the healing journey, and the healing journey is multi-layered. And so work that I thought I had accomplished a long time ago tends to reprise every time I'm leveling up, right?
Totally.
And, you know, one of those wounds from going up as someone who was born in a female body in the evangelical system is just feeling that I'm valued, that I am valuable as I am. And resisting the urge to want to be picked, to want to be chosen, right? Just being confident and firm in my inherent value, which we all have, and not paying so much attention to or caring about how people are responding to like my social media posts or how many people are like listening to my podcast or interacting with me or are all of the things that we receive as feedback when they really aren't about us at all.
You know? Right. And it's really hard in our digital world. Yeah.
Shoot.
Yep.
That's a challenge that's reprised again and again through my life. And I've made, you know, remarkable progress on that, but still I'll come back to that and I don't know. It's, that's a intrinsic wound from the very beginning of my life.
Yeah. And I think that it's relatable even without, I mean, I, you know, that my background and family's background is very similar, but I think, did you see the Barbie movie?
I haven't yet. I plan to.
You've got to.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
I know there's people have lots of feelings about it, but you got to see it. Even if you hate it, I still want to hear about it. But I don't think you'll totally hate it, even if you hate parts. No. But like this conversation even right here about just being a woman and our value and worth by our externals and all of these pieces. So, you know, I think that so often people hear these ideas of like, yes, just, you know, self-mastery and authenticity and all that, but there's so much heaviness weighing them down that it's like the how, you know, becomes so difficult. And I think certainly you and I agree, there's no right way, but what does that look like day to day for us? You know, your tag is Gritty Mystic, which I also, once I saw that, I was very jealous of your wordplay and how I was like, I love that. I wish I would have thought of that one. But like, what does that grittiness look like for you? What is that? How has that come to be? What is the grit for you?
I love that question so much. We aspire, I mean, those who are on, you know, the self-mastery journey, the, you know, path, personal spirituality, or any spirituality, typically we aspire to have an experience with the divine, right? And that's what the mystic part of it is someone who has a direct experience with the divine and comes back and shares how to bridge the gap between the mundane and the divine, right? And the fact is it's not one day waking up, being enlightened, and all of a sudden, I'm connected. I'm plugged in and everything's great and love and light. It's hard. There's grit. There's determination. There's work involved in forging that connection and being committed to it. It's just because of the fact that we are in this playground right now, where we consciously and unconsciously create shit we learn and refine what we're creating through contrast. That's really the only way that we can discover what we would prefer is when we're faced with something we don't prefer. And so there's always going to be the grit of, oh my God, this is happening now. Right. And instead of being bogged down and heavy about that, we have the opportunity to be inquisitive, to be curious, and inquire, what would I prefer? Is this indeed whatever is showing up? Is this revealing to me something that wants deeper work? Is this revealing a part of me that needs you know, some deeper love? Is this, you know, showing me that, you know, what I had intended is actually not in alignment where I'm really truly headed? There's so much that we can learn from contrast rather than just sitting in the pain of it. But we got to get gritty about it. We got to get real about it. And, you know, anyone who's loving and lighting out there, I just, that does not feel authentic to me. That is not an experience I have ever had. And I've had like the most like make me mute type of connections with the divine, those mountaintop experiences that there are no words to explain. Right. But we're not in this framework that we live in built to maintain that. Right. That's just not what this 3D universe is about. We are here to learn how to elevate what we're doing, our, whether you call it your vibration, what you're creating, however you frame that experience, to, because while we're healing individually, that's another way to think about it, is our healing cycles, as we heal individually, we contribute to the healing of the collective. And that healing is something that is at the forefront right now, because if you see the chaos that's happening, it's not just in our life, but all around, it's an opportunity to see the wounds and to heal them. And you know, the best way to do that is accepting that it's gritty and hard, but it's so good. It's so good. It's so worth it. And yeah, that embodying one's self is the end game. Will we see the very end of that game? Probably not.
Right.
But right. Worth.
And I think that it's so easy, like this, even listening to you, to imagine, I'm glad that you named that you're not all about love and light, because it's so easy to think that that's what we're hearing. And so I wanted to illuminate the gritty side for you too, because one, that's of course part of what allowed us to connect. And I think in just to make sure that everyone bring it as layperson as possible here, it's also the language of shadow work or whole self, right? That I'm not just like lean into the mystical experiences of my day to day. And when I meditate and imagine that, I'm just going to put unicorns on everything and that'll make it better, but really allowing yourself to look hard at like, why do I not value myself? Or, you know, what did this evangelical upbringing do for me? And why am I still in these patterns and feeling stuck? Right. Cause I know we know each other well enough that I know you're not living in bliss every day either.
No. Right.
Right. And I think that the next sort of round of reckoning in the spiritual world is really something you and I both, I know, agree on, and that this is the piece that's been missing, is that love and light and just acting like, I don't know. I went to Barnes and Noble. There's still one in the Metro Detroit area.
Really?
A real big bookstore. I know. And listen, maybe they used to be the man. They're not anymore. Keep them alive. I'm so happy to have a big bookstore. but I, you know, they always have like staff picks, and somebody picked The Secret. Mm-hmm. And I was like, first of all, fascinating, because it's like two decades later, right? Secondly, I think that in some ways The Secret did damage in the spiritual ways that you and I are feeling pushed up against. And you know, my friend Shannon and I joke, because she says, I do it with Kapaks all the time, like this idea of just like wanting and that you can just manifest whatever you need at any point, and you just want it, you just put it out, and that's it, you know. And so taking all of this beautiful stuff you said, but like, what does that mastery really look like in the like gritty foot on the ground kind of day to day? What do those practices look like for you? You said, you know, align, allow, be, but what does that look like?
Entry point. So first I'm going to share a visual, and then we can get into practices. How's that sound?
Great.
Okay. So if we think about ourselves just in this world, and we're going about our day, and we come upon the time that we might quote unquote call our awakening. The awakening moment is usually when we are this iceberg floating in the middle of the ocean, and we realize, oh my word, I'm only the tip of this massive, massive piece of ice floating around in this ocean. I'm a whole ass iceberg.
Currently in the devil's anus, as you said. It's really hot. It's really hot everywhere in the Midwest. Okay. I love that. I had to lock it in.
And so in order to fully grasp what it means, now that you realize that you're not just the tip of the iceberg on top of the water that sees the sunlight, but you're this whole ass iceberg, integrating that whole self becomes that first phase of alchemy, or the align phase. It's like, I am so much greater than I ever thought I was, but there's this stuff underneath the water. There are these triggers and traumas. There's this stuff that needs to be healed so that I can feel worthy and whole, and I'm safe in my body, and all of this work that I need to do in order to feel my true self is even possible, right? Just realizing I'm just so much greater. And we lean into those different ways of healing. We lean into embodiment. We lean into somatics. We lean into, it could be yoga. We lean into meditation, all forms of healing, depending on, you know, whether we're working through capital T or small T traumas. And it's an up and down kind of thing as we integrate the fact that we're a whole ass iceberg. Mm-hmm. But then as we're doing this and we're feeling pretty good about it now, we feel like our capability, and we've identified practices that feel wholesome to us, and we're building community around this healing work, and how we're not just, you know, this, you know, scared ego, that we're so much greater. We realize, oh, wait a minute, I'm not just this whole ass iceberg. I'm the ocean too. And suddenly our sense of self expands again. And we come to realize that it's not just about doing anymore. The doing of the healing, the doing of the meditation, the doing of the things to be something, you know, better. But it's also about allowing. It's about allowing that massive, greater, expansive sense of self to take up more space in our day-to-day. It's about allowing that perspective to inform us. It's about all of the ways that we rewrite what our purpose is. We're in alignment, but also allowing what's meant for us to be, to show up because of who we are, not because of what we do. So suddenly productivity is like, at odds, right? With allowing the more expansive part of ourselves to take up space in our life. Well, there's a lot of ebbs and flows, and we can talk about what that work looks like as well. But the journey continues, and as we're aligning and we're allowing, we have these experiences with how we're magnetizing things that are greater than we could ever anticipate into our life, not just the narrow work of law of attraction work, right? Mm-hmm. And manifesting super specific things, but like in alignment with who we're fucking being. Mm-hmm. We realize that our job is, or that our existence is not just the iceberg and not just the ocean itself, but the cosmos. We are one. Mm-hmm. This unity consciousness, it, like, we use those words, unity consciousness, but they don't really settle until you get to this certain part of your journey where you realize how intricately connected you are with everyone and everything. And that really shifts our perspective and how we behave toward people, and how we show up in relationships, and how we treat our planet, and how we see others who are also making all these decisions around us, right? And we shift into this place of, what does it mean for me to just be and more expansively embody my greater being? And that work in its of itself is so subtle. Mm-hmm. I was just writing about this in the Insta the other day, that my practice is the quality of my presence. If you just shift from what I need to do to how am I being in this moment, while it feels subtle, the innate wisdom that's available to you becomes like a spring. It's just like available, right? And so our work becomes a lot different than when we're in this, when we're in the being space. And that's more of an advanced place that we can talk about later when we talk about transformational coaching and how we can access that space. And so there are these three massively different phases that we go through, and they're iterative, right? There's steps forward and steps back as we, as you master anything, as you master any skill and or any way of being. And so the work at first, you know, when we're thinking about that iceberg integration is really about, is really focused on initial healing and figuring out who we are. And we're asking, what am I here to do? When actually find out it's, who am I here to be? Right. And then we shift then into more of that allowing heart space and in filtering all of the different ways that we want to show up, we become super challenged in this, in this phase, because we realize how deep some of these themes roll as we're doing our archaeology of self. But we also can access and feel the support of that greater expansiveness of being while doing this work. So it's not as scary as I might be making it sound right now. But as a framework, as a framework, you know, that just kind of gives you a, you are here, orientation in the journey of self-mastery itself. And so when you think about your awakening, like, how, tell me a little bit. I want to hear more about
Here I am interviewing you.
I know. You can't help but be a podcaster, right? I'm the same way usually. I'm actually being very good at shutting up. So I just like to, you know, give myself
a well, tell me how this resonates with your experience.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have probably read, you know, 90% of the same damn books, I'm pretty sure. I saw your bookshelf. And I've never heard this analogy, and I love it, because I love a fucking metaphor. I'll take it and spin it. So I'm already thinking about all the ways that, you know, like automatically I'm like, oh, and then like you realize that you're the tip of the iceberg. And so you got to like put your goggles on to like see, even start to like look under the water and like into the dark depths of of the ocean and see how deeply you're rooted. And like, I have chills, like all like that. I love that metaphor so much. And then as I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh shit. And the ice is the same substance as the water. Right. And so then I'm imagining like the iceberg taking on more and less of like the solidity of it. And then less, and like that melting and whatever it's called when the iceberg gets more icy. So I was just thinking of like that part of the metaphor and how beautiful that is to remember that we're all made of the same stuff. Even just in the, just at the simplicity of water, right? And then, you know, I love the expansive cosmos. I mean, I just love a metaphor. So it's interesting. I feel like with most things, and I bet there is, I would be curious to have you answer the same question, because you had a very, you had a much tighter, I was the third. So my family had given up a lot of the evangelical stuff. In fact, most of it, the reason my parents moved away from Michigan, I was born in New Hampshire, was because they were partly, my dad got a different job, but part of that was to leave a Pentecostal Assemblies of God church where my dad was speaking in tongues, but they realized the only way out, and my mother was really unhappy because she was being put against a panel and told all the way she was a horrible human. Anyway, the reason, part of the reason they left was so that they could break free without losing their whole community. So, but there's no way that that doesn't trickle into also how I was raised and just my dad as a whole. So it's interesting. Like, I don't feel like I didn't have as clear of a moment of like wakefulness. I feel like I was always both awake, and I would guess that there was a part of you that would also say that. Right. And it actually turns into the conversation around neurodivergence for me, because I think that that's an adaptation for a lot of us from this dance between the gritty and the mystical, right? Between being, I have chills, being little people and knowing that there was something else, like real, that felt real inside of us that wasn't being expressed in the world. In fact, was being not only squashed, but quieted or told was wrong or totally just negated in every possible way, right? And there's, and then you're this, I don't know, I just remember dancing between the humanness of me and my spiritual self, even as a little being, just not really having language for it. So if I think about awakening, it was just always there. I mean, we just lost Sinead O'Connor, right? And I was reflecting class today that like I shaved my head at 19 and I never made the connection of like, who, like, where would have I gotten that idea? Fucking Sinead O'Connor. Like, duh. Yeah. Right. Like that. I loved her and, you know,
all right.
Right. And so like, and it was just this like subtle way to say F you to everything that felt so out of whack, but like, it was the act of rebellion that I could do, you know?
So punk.
What?
So punk.
So punk. I mean, also I was trying to be a butch lesbian at the time. So while dating a boy, actually, strangely, one of the few I dated.
Nice.
But regardless, yeah, I guess it all kind of makes sense. So I think my awakening was like a slow reckoning with a reclaiming of what I've always known, which I think is the same for all of us, but it wasn't as clear as yours. So it's like, I always felt like I was connected to the iceberg under the water. I just didn't know, maybe know what the water was or why I had to hide that part of myself. Right. And I wasn't very good at hiding it either. Like, I've never been good at not being who I am to a fault, you know? I'll tell you one more little thing and then we'll go back to interviewing you. And I may have already said this in the podcast. I'm not sure. I know I forget what I say in class and what I say here, but, in the last couple of years, I think it must've been during the pandemic, I had a high school teacher reach out to me. He lives in my neighborhood now. And, he asked me to come over and teach him some new stretches. And I'd done that, like, I don't know, 15 years before. I may have told you this story already. Have I? I'm not sure. Anyway. Okay. I'll just tell it. And, he was like a brand spanking new teacher when I had him. And I think he asked me like if I connected with anybody still from high school. And I was like, you know, a few people, but like I fucking hated high school and it had no reason to like want to stay connected. And I don't have a great memory. I think that we've talked about that before, about what happened or things like that. But it was really affirming what he told me. He told me essentially that there was a asshole football player that was like, you know, a big guy, and he was always razzing on other people in class. And apparently at some point he had picked on some girl that I don't even know who these people were at the time. And I said something to him to the effect of like, oh, does your dick get bigger by like picking on other people or like, you know, constantly harassing everyone, you know, does that make you think that you like, whatever, I like was completely demasculating. Anyway, him in that moment. Right. And like, then proceeded, you know, over time, all I remembered is that he used to spitballs at me. Now I know why. Now I know why, because I fucking called him out for being a fucking dick to everyone. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was like, go 16-year-old Anne, like, fuck yeah. Yes. Like it felt good to know that I've always been this version of me. Like,
yeah,
you know, guns a-blazing, like, you know, because I don't have those memories. And so to back to like Sinead and like, I've always been that and had a hard time not being that. And so I think that it was just more and more over time, finding that there was a language for it, that the water was like a universal thing that we could all tap into and know, and that I already knew it. I already was tapped in. It was just finding other people. I was just reflecting, like Neil Donald Walsh was like the first, books I read, Conversations with God. There were enough adjacent to Christianity. And like, as I'm 18, 19, that, or 17, 18, that I was like, oh my God, there's people that think there's more like I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Which it sounds like you did the same thing.
Yep.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, that's fascinating. I had the people pleasing disease. And so that's why I wasn't as punk back then as I am now.
I've had this baby face my whole life, so I'm not sure how punk I actually was. But I also was wearing a lot of cargo pants and, you know, just not comfortable in my skin necessarily, because I also thought you had to be like butch to be a lesbian. I didn't know that there was another way, or that you could even like pick somewhere in the middle. Right.
Right,
those things were all like still very new. And so, you know, I'm certain that I still am very good at people pleasing. I think I also just have a little bit more inner rebel that pokes the bear and like back to neurodivergence, like realizing mm-hmm. my inability to keep my fucking mouth shut is part of just how my brain works, you know, and going, oh, that's impulsivity. You mean that's why I just gave you 20 minutes of context for one question? Oh, learning that about myself, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. No, and I like unapologetically, you know, like, yeah. Yep. That's my charm. You know?
100.
Yeah.
It's so important for people to hear that the awakening experience is totally different for different people, that it might be a slow burn. Like it was for you, or it might be dramatic. Like it was for me. It was like, I was at a place in my life where it's like, I will not like survive. I will not stay on this planet mm-hmm. if I do not make this change, you know? And so for mm-hmm. some people, it's a diagnosis. It's the death of someone. For other people, it's just like, they feel that dissonance inside them. And so they go in search of what's going to relieve this. Yep. Right.
Yep.
I read Conversations with God too. And I was like, it was interesting because he used, you know, Christian nomenclature, right?
Right.
Cause he came from that perspective as well. And then that was a gateway to learning more about law of attraction. I was like, that's mm-hmm. interesting. And intuition. I was like, I have that. And, mm-hmm. I read my first Abraham book, Esther Hicks mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. book. And I was like, okay, now. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Just the floodgates opened, and when I was ready to learn, the materials appeared.
Yeah, absolutely. I followed the same path, right? And it was like, you know, this is also the era of talk shows, so it was like Montel Williams had Sylvia Brown, and I was just like, this is fascinating.
Yeah,
I am so fascinated by this, right? And you know, just not having language for all the things that.
Oh, that.
Yeah, all of it, you know, and I even think like to my father, both my parents, my mother, her clinical depression, I am certain is a result of having her whole life to not only people please, but to dampen her innate HSP nature, and my yeah. father's nature of seeking and feeling and knowing there was something else, and then being so damn smart that he just squashed it, you know, and mm-hmm. same thing, the boomers, what else did they have but religion or drugs? And my parents were too straight laced, too straight and on the straight and narrow. They were not hippies despite being perfectly aged for it.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Good old church. Right. I mean, wow, that's an interesting thing. Let's walk that timeline. Like what if both of our parents had decided instead of church that they chose like psilocybin or, you know, like,
right.
How different.
Grew up pagan. It would have been awesome.
Right. Maybe, or maybe we'd be less interesting because we had less grit.
I don't know. I can't imagine that. I mean, there's a lot of grit in pagan studies, and there's just a lot.
No, I guess I mean like less oppression or like, you know, like the stuff that for me, the devastating anxiety and all the stuff that I experienced in clinically depressed mother, which would have probably existed had she been a hippie or a, you know, churchgoer. But I'm grateful, like so deeply grateful for those things, for what they allowed me to understand, and that mm-hmm. like, I don't want an easier path necessarily. And I don't know. Do you feel like you want an easier path?
I mean, at the time those things were happening, wished it was easier. When I was just like not functional.
Well, and if you're on the
so depressed.
Of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was definitely a crucible. And it was like, in this life, I have picked a lot of ways to be oppressed.
Yeah.
It's like rejecting religion, you know, divorce, queerness, you know, gender fluidity, neurodivergence. Like what else? What
yeah.
else?
Yeah.
You know, definitely been a lot of contrast.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question. Do you think that the nature of human beings really is more complex than we've just allowed it to be? Do you think more and more people, given the freedom and liberation you've given yourself, would experience themselves as more fluid in most ways?
Absolutely. I absolutely do. And you know, not, I didn't have any language growing up around gender or sexuality other than homos are going to hell. I mean, that was the only thing I knew. Right. But the more I've traveled this journey and the more I've experienced unity consciousness in my still point time, the less relevant gender is to me, the less relevant a lot of these just like arbitrary boundaries we've set up, identities we've set up mean to me. It's like I see through them, they're illusory. And so I truly do believe that the more people that are in pursuit of unity consciousness and experiencing that for themselves, the less anyone's going to give a single fuck about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. I think likely it's even just, it's like another step along the way as we keep kind of figuring this out. And I mean, if we go to the idea that souls have had many lives and that the more times you've done this, it certainly makes sense that you would feel relatively comfortable in both genders to some degree. And I mean, even the idea that anything is binary is so stupid to me. Like,
right.
Look at a bell curve. If things are binary, it's like 2 to 4%, right? Of like any one thing would hit on the either end. So 2% maybe here and 2% here, but like nothing's actually really that binary. And to me, what spirituality has done and, or embracing the mystical and the grittiness, to use your language, has allowed me to be less afraid of that murky middle, as I like to call it, like the wild unknown, which is, you know, I wrote down when I was listening to you, co-creating, like the permission to actually just be in the potential of this dance called humanness that here we are, whether you think you chose it or not, here you are.
Yeah. I've never resonated with binaries and I didn't have any language to put around why that is. But the best language that I found is the Hermetic law of polarity, that everything is on an axis and you're dialing up or down between opposites. So male and femaleness, right? Hot and cold. It's like, where do you designate? It's not, you're not hot or cold. You know, it's a scale. Everything is on a polarity. And so if we understand that, not only do these binaries become less important for us to get all entrenched and defend, but we realize that we have control of where we are on that scale. And we can dial it up and dial it down. And that becomes very, very powerful, especially when we're talking about mood or, you know, if we want to talk about vibration, we have absolute control over that if we just realize what it is, that the binary doesn't actually exist.
Do you think people have control over that? Like, does that Hermetic scale, in terms of the word control, when you apply that to orientation or gender expression, or do you think anything's fixed on that scale?
So when we're talking about orientation, I don't see that in terms of binary, but we do have biological set points. And so we could, I wouldn't put, you know, being straight and being queer as opposites. I don't see them as opposites. Right. But in straightness, you could be more or less straight, right?
Got it.
In queerness, there, it has its own, you know, sliding scale. And so definitely inherently queer. There's nothing not queer about me.
I'm just curious, like where does that, where does that metaphor begin and end, you know, or that understanding?
So it becomes important to identify what the opposites are, right? And sometimes people have incorrectly identified straight and you know, queer as opposites, and they're not.
So what is the opposite of those things? What, or is there one?
I mean, it's more or less, right? It's the expression of sexuality.
Okay. So negative or positive is really more like the polarity approach. Got it. Interesting. Got to wrap my brain around that one a little bit. I'll
let that one go. So you've talked about align, allow, be, and the relationship to the word alchemy. How do you understand the word alchemy?
Alchemy is all about uncovering the essence of something. When people talk about it, is transmutation. There's a transmutation component, but that can be confusing to people. It's really about embodying one's highest form. And so when we think about the tales of alchemy, turning lead into gold, the idea was metal's highest form is gold, right? But that was just an allegory for how we transmute ourselves as people from being ego-driven and focused on pain, and distilling ourselves to our essential form, which is like multidimensional spirit, intelligence, consciousness. So that's alchemy, is the process of moving yourself from that point of realization that you're the entire iceberg, you are more, to embodying that soul self perspective that you are, even in this limited capacity that we can be in human form. And so that's the work of alchemy. And Align, Allow, Be just like lays right on top of that, in just like a modern way of expressing the same thing.
Because I think that so often the other challenge with this love and light idea, at least for me, has been that you're transcending the density of humanness or earth.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. This whole, I lost the word, but it's the idea is, yeah. Like some of us are going to yeet out of the 3D and all of a sudden land ourselves in 5D. Like, no, these bodies don't travel there. Mm-hmm. And hold your horses. That sounds a lot like evangelical Christianity trying to escape what we've created here and go someplace better, AKA heaven, where everything is love and light and awesome. No, that is not what we're doing here. We have entered this experiment because we are master creators. We created this dumpster fire and we can co-create something better. The new earth, we make it, we create it. We're not going to just like take some kind of leap on out of here. Yes, vibration is very important. Yes, you know, managing what you're putting out, really important for yourself and just collectively. But no, there's not going to be ascending. That's it. Ascension into, you know, complete other domains. This biologic right here doesn't do that.
Right.
And you want to spend your next incarnation in a different dimension? I mean, you are. You know, we're concurrently in all of the dimensions and can access intelligence from those lives and all of that kind of stuff. But that's not the work that's happening here. And that's a really damaging trope that's being perpetuated by these new agey practitioners. Yeah, it's not only false hope, but it's like not the point of being here in the first place. That's like dragging our focal point into this weird, you know, rapture narrative. Mm-hmm. It's just like, how do you not see these two things are the same?
Yeah.
So damaging.
Well, and it's like, to me, back to the language of trauma, like this is just another escapism avoidant pattern. Disassociation. You're just leaving your body in a way that you've deemed more glorified. You've created a more glorified way to do that. It's interesting what you say about 5D. I have a friend who talks a lot about 5D, and we've discussed at length. And what you described as the new earth, when I ask her these questions, her because I'm always like, what do you mean? What's happening to the human body? Like, you know, I'm always pusher against her of the thing, like, help me understand that part. I don't get that. And her guides and connection source was essentially saying that the idea is that we're still going to live in a dualistic world. Earth is never not going to be of duality. And the earth, in my understanding so far, was created so that we could live in the sensory experience of emotion and feeling and separation. And so like, yes, that's part of the illusion, but it's also part of the game. And so call it whatever you want. I the word game fits for me. Cause I like the metaphor, the video game, yep, the avatar. And so her feeling and understanding so far is that what 5D actually is that we are moving to what you and I are working on all the time, which is to remember that we're here to co-create, to play, and to not be so, to still have the density and the suffering, but not to be so weighed down by it, quite frankly. And that the new earth, I don't know, you know, this is, I'm just sort of sharing what her expression was. The new earth is when we can elevate our energy fields and see the potential. Like, cause I was like, well, there still be suffering and, you know, all like, does that still exist? And she's like, that will exist no matter as long as duality exists to some degree, but maybe the hope is that we as human beings will be less affected by it in the ways that we are, and hopefully not perpetuating so much of the suffering, war, you know, imbalances, all of that. I still see some gaps in that for me. There's still a lot of questions about how we get from there to from here to there. Like, when do humans stop being humanly? What's that for a word? You know?
Yeah. I mean, the more we participate in other dimensions, in the other dimensions, there's less of this amnesia of this disconnect to who we are, really are. And so, you know, the 5D journey is less about awakening, rediscovering, and embodying, right? Because you already understand who you are, and the time between the thought and the manifestation of one's creation is heck of a lot shorter.
Yeah.
The bodies are not as dense. There's no like, I wish I could lose 5 pounds in the 5D. It's like you have total control of your biologic slash light body, you know. It's outside of our current awareness, like what that will really look like. Will there be suffering like we experience it here? Have to believe that it's not going to be the very same.
Yeah.
Because there's so much ignorance that is fuel for the fire of suffering here, not only in the creating of the suffering, but in the like living in it, dwelling in it, just like pushing our own faces in it.
Yeah. Ruminating. Yes, absolutely.
And and if you already know who you are as a multidimensional being and have access to your capabilities in other dimensions, that becomes irrelevant. Creating that. You're not unintentional about your creating anymore, right? And so there's a completely different level of awareness around creating and co-creating. Co-creating is a huge deal as we are moving up in the dimensions. And so, yeah, I mean, of course, there's still going to be a lot of mystery because there's only so much that we can comprehend where we are right now. And our job is definitely, I mean, when we think about spiritual alchemy and the Align Allow Be framework, and we realize that unity conscious is the end game, you can see how this is not only an individual journey, but it's a collective journey as well. And so just as the United States right now, we're in this messy spot, right? Where all of this pain and all of this trauma and all of these wounds are on the surface so that we can see and heal them. We can align as a collective here in a different direction now. We have that opportunity, whereas before, where everything is under the water and we don't realize that we're an entire iceberg, we can ignore that. We're not listening to anyone who's snorkeling. We don't want to know what's down there. We just want to focus on the sunshine, right? And so we are also, as a collective, on this very same journey. And, you know, as we are mastering our own selves, that contributes to what's possible as we co-create something new here. And more is possible than ever has been before, because so many people are awakening to who they are.
So when you talk about multidimensional beings and those practices and connecting with that, what does that look like for you on a daily practice or a weekly practice?
Yeah. I meditate daily, and I usually do it first thing in the morning when I'm like first cup of coffee time of day. So
yeah,
I'm still like easing into the day, not fully all firing and all of my pistons, and the ego is still pretty sleepy. And
do you
I'm
do guided meditations? Do you do drums?
I don't. I like guided meditations for, you know, certain times of the year and certain things I want to experience. But I do what I call still point practice, and I settle into this most still part of myself. And how, because I'm such a visual thinker, and I know not everyone has pictures in their head like we do, but, over this is kind of a fun story. Once upon a time when I started this practice and I realized how important it was for me to meditate and get still, meditation for me is very active versus just watching my breath. I go to a place where I can meet with my highest intelligence, my guides, whatever concept you want to place around that. And at first I received an image of a location, and that helped me anchor into that space, right? Mm-hmm. It might be a beach for you. It might be, you know, a set of rooms. It might be, you know, a mountain lake, whatever it is. And so I anchored into that image of that spot. And over time, it kind of like grew. Mm-hmm. Like I became aware of more of this space and more places that I could go and more energies that I could meet with. And what I learned over time is that by doing that, you're actually creating fourth dimensional space that you visit. And so there's this very real space that I go to. Mm-hmm. And there are certain places within this space that have different purposes for me, depending on what kind of work I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so for a day-to-day practice, I visit this space. I'm like just really anchoring into this, you know, intelligence, this expansive part of myself, calling in guides, ancestors, protectors. And when I'm in this space, I often will receive just what I need for this day. I can bring challenges and receive solutions, or, you know, answers like hold your horses.
Mm-hmm. You know, the most annoying one.
Don't be right. So freaking impatient.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is not the right time for whatever. But it's just such a grounding, nurturing, intelligent space. The more time I can spend there, the more plugged in I feel the rest of my day, and the more that soul self is available to me that day. And so that's my practice, my biggest cornerstone practice each day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I always say to people, like, I think people have a lot of ideas about what a meditation is and what it isn't. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're all just boundaries that our brain creates to keep us away from it. So whatever works, works until it doesn't anymore. So, right. If you love guided meditations, great. If you love a drum, great. If you love angels singing, great. Like, it does not matter if you have to do it moving because stillness is too difficult for your body or your nervous system. Move. Like whatever the thing is, let it, like, you're describing it becoming its own thing. You know, I consider what you described as like a power place, and that everyone has one, and that, you know, my question for you is, yours feel up or down?
It doesn't have that kind of orientation.
Or middle. Nothing? No? Okay.
No, I just, yeah. I just
do you ever travel up, or do you ever travel down when you're in there? No. Cool. Just curious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was hung up on what meditation is for a long, long time too. And watching my breaths does not work for me. My neurodivergent brain says no. Yeah. I literally cannot. But the point for me, that I encourage everyone to find where stillness is. If you think about your life and you think about the answers that you're seeking are underneath some water, like you're going to Lake Michigan, right?
And if
the water's moving, if it's churning, if the waves are crashing on the shore, you can't even see the sand, or if you're trying to, you know, roll out to the sandbar. But when it's calm, you can see every ripple, you can see every rock, you can see the grains of sand in the sandbar. Getting to that place where we have enough stillness that we can see clearly is really what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. And letting yourself develop it over time, knowing that it's not the spiritual part of it, the mystical part will grow, but also your nervous system has to learn to settle enough, in my opinion, to be able to get there. And so being
absolutely
in that process, I truly think I would not have been able to meditate without having established for me, an asana practice first. So asana helped me rewire and retrain my brain in a way that I could then drop in. There's the analogy of priming the pump, right? And so, and I think ritual is helpful too for people, whatever the thing is, if it's light a candle, if it's be outside, if it's whatever, like you have coffee, right? And you sit down in a place and, you know, but not that it has to be that, right? Some of us are like, I need novelty all the time. So like no rules, just play with it. Like this is the whole reminder, right? For all of us, co-creation. So play.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And how do you create sacred space for yourself? It doesn't have to look at all like how anyone else does. And when I first started, it took me a long time to be able to hold my anchor point in that space. Mm-hmm. I was just like all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. But now it's just like in a breath, I'm there. And it's definitely something you develop over time.
Yeah. So it kind of goes to the state of being, and I know you want to circle back to that, but this idea of the coaching that we learned and the state of being, and how does this all connect into that for you?
Well, you and I both have like been aware of this as a modality, whether you call it transformational coaching or something else. For me, there's a mentor guide component. But what the point of transformational coaching is for me in the Align Allow Be journey is to help people connect with their own agency in their self-mastery journey. And so it's not about me being a guide from A to B, but being a guide in helping them find it within themselves, feel what that feels like, feel how expansive they actually are. And access their own wisdom, and it comes out in such surprising ways, and then, you know, just like debriefing on that experience, because it's not just now that we're talking it out, I have SMART goals, you know. It's like, oh my gosh, there's this place I can return inside of me when I have questions like this, or when I want to return to this work. And as we spend this time together and you and I hold space for those who come to work with us, at first that cocoon is needed in order to access that spot, right? But then as, you know, the person we're working with develops and really gains confidence in that agency, they're able to create that for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that is the beauty of it, because it's just really helping people anchor into the truth of who they are and that they have access to everything that they need.
Yeah.
And it's hard to put words around what that is, because that journey is going to be different for every single person we work with.
Absolutely.
But it helps people access that being space. So that they know what's possible for them.
Yeah.
So that they can, you know, we hear our soul's calling, but don't often believe that we're capable. We can experience the capability in that space and feel more confident than stepping toward aligning and allowing that to actually become manifest in our life. And so that's why I don't know that I'll always call it transformational coaching.
Yeah. Right.
But that's why I love that work so much, because it truly, it's like the shortest route that I have found to experiencing.
Going to say back to like the very beginning of like the conversation and what was taken from you in the evangelical world and organized religion and just as women in general. And I just made like an aha in my own brain, which is not an aha, but like I think, you know, you and I talk about like the link ups, right? And that our brains are good at networking. And I was like, oh, like that's what it is the reclamation of this is not a light bulb, but the reclamation of giving, helping people find their way back to trusting that, that they never needed anyone or anything outside of them to help them access divinity within and divinity without.
And absolutely.
So transformational coaching, I agree. We both aren't in love with the name of that. I don't even like the name coach. So if somebody has some great names, throw them at us. We'll both be appreciated.
Please tell me. I am waiting.
Yeah, exactly. But the mentor guide piece too. But that all we're doing is holding space. I mean, my friend Shannon and I always joke about the Bible verse, like where two or more are gathered in my name. But the reality is that container and holding vibration for one another helps people get there faster. And when the ego wants to jump in, the job for you and I as the guide, mentor, coach, whatever the effing name is you put in front of it, is to help people continue to notice when they're going up into their head, or if they can come back down into that other state of being, and and help facilitate that reclamation of agency, autonomy, self-knowledge, call it whatever you want. It's the same place.
All of that. Right?
Yeah.
And the cool thing is when you're looking for coach, guide, mentor, you'll resonate with certain people and you may not know why. When I first learned about human design, I finally, the light bulb went off and I realized why that happens, and realized for me, what I help provide for people is access to their voice just by the design of who I am. And so in sessions, people will, you know, they'll be able to put concepts together and put voice to them in a way that they've never been able to before. And that in and of itself is very powerful. Feeling and experience, but each of us through, you know, our beautiful design offer something different, help people connect to that soul part of themselves in different ways. And I don't know, that's been fun to witness. It's not something I can explain, but just happens.
Hmm. Do you use human design in your coaching, mentoring, guide, guidership? Let me make up a new word. Guidance.
I think that would be phenomenal, but I just, at this very moment in time, I don't need to learn one more modality.
No shit, right? I know you're really connected to it. So I was curious if you've started venturing that way.
I'm fascinated by it, but it's going to be a whole new language. And
yeah, I think it's just one more tool that gets us to the same place. And like, at some point,
it's very affirming.
Yeah, it's affirming. Right, for sure. Well, it hasn't been for me. Because the few people that I've been exposed to, it was just like, they weren't able to bring it down to the level I needed to they couldn't fit it into a framework I already had. And so, I need somebody who can like dumb it down enough for me. That's not even the right words. Right. But just to bring it to a more accessible place.
Practical place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it seems, I mean, I get the gist of it, but like all things, like you can tell me about I cannot for the life of me remember what my sun, moon, rising, whatever is. Like, I'm still an old school, like I'm a Cancer. I don't know anything. I think I got a Libra in there and there's a Leo somewhere else. And, you know,
I love me some astrology. Yeah.
I think it's fascinating and I've had some great readings, but like I just haven't ever had the desire to spend enough time with it. And then, you know, being as I don't define myself as a millennial, I'd like to know more. I just don't.
I know enough to be dangerous with astrology. Absolutely another language, but I'm deeply curious about it. And I have an astrologer that I meet with at least on an annual basis.
Hook me up, girl. I think you told me about it.
I will. Just like phenomenal. Just kind of like the weather forecast for the coming year, big picture, but also month by month. And so for me, you know, human design is in part based on astrology. And so it just like reverberated some of the same themes back. But what was interesting to me about human design is how we are each puzzle pieces. And so you can see in relationship to other people why some relationships work and why some don't, because of the puzzle piece that you are, how some people fit, and together you can co-create in these very specific ways where those synergies are. You can see them in kind of your bodygram or whatever it's called in human design. And so that is so fascinating to me. But yeah, overwhelming to learn the ins and the outs. And if you just like know how to read a chart, it's not going to be enough. Like the person right. that I worked with initially that I interviewed for my podcast, her name is Robin Nguyen, and she is incredibly intuitive and insightful. And she just blew my mind. I also work with a numerologist who also blows my mind.
I want all the people.
Okay.
Hook you up. Yeah, hook me up. I'll interview them here too and help blast them a little bit. But I love that shit. And, you know, I think it's like, I did numerology with Sue Frederick. Honestly, she was phenomenal and blew my mind as well. Especially because she also then did my wife and daughter. And I hope to at some point interview her as well. But it was absolutely fascinating. And I felt like for the first time, because I've had a lot of shit read and done and whatever, maybe not the first time, but the first time with someone who didn't know me in some capacity previously, just nailed it. And I was like, okay, like I felt seen. And I think that was always so validating for me. It was like, she was under the water in the iceberg too. And I was like, yes. And it was important to me because I think sometimes when we're in this world of the spiritual stuff, if you have someone who isn't as clear of a channel, their own humanness can play in. And then we're taking those of us sensitive, we take that on and it can be like, wait, why didn't you say the thing that I'm thinking about that I want to do? That must mean I shouldn't. And it can become evidence of our own bullshit again. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so for the first time I was like, oh wait, no, she was like just really validating about how the things I want to show up. And even the fact that like, she's like, you're never going to be done taking courses. I was like, and reading books and doing things. That's and I was like,
amazing. Fair save your assessment. Because
right. Right. Yes. Cause she's like, you just will always, she's like, you know, she's in her 70s and she's like, I just finished this latest training. And she's like, just, this is what I am. And I'm like, I got you. Like, you know,
yeah,
I'm always going to be working and hustling. So I might as well just buckle up.
Yeah. I work with Sue Coffin, and the first time she read me, I couldn't believe it. It was so little information. Like, how could she like see into the deepest parts of me? It's like,
Okay, cool.
Connect with her. Yeah.
I'm gonna need a long list of people. and then I'd love to interview anyone who wants to be interviewed too, because I think it's you know, it, like to the listeners, like some of these conversations are much more woo than others. This one's leaning heavily woo, and like bringing in healthy curiosity and skepticism. Yeah. I'm here for it. Yeah. Like you and I are both absolutely people who, you know, inner Sinead, push up against the machine, whatever the machine is, and find out if it's really for you. And it's okay that not everything, there's so many languages and so many ways to understand this, and that we're not all going to be, as much as I wish we all could see the world the same way, it's never going to happen. That's one of the biggest disappointments in my adult life.
There are just so many different lenses. And, you know, as we're on this journey of becoming our most authentic and powerful self, like those kinds of practitioners are allies. Say, yeah, go for it. You have this inherent giftedness, and these types of things are going to work for you. And here's the season when you're going to be pushing and moving. And this is a season where you're going to be foundation building, you know, and all of that is just, it has helped me not just hammer my head against the wall so much. And just be more patient with the ebbs and flows that are natural. But I always think that I need to be on and moving and going, but apparently no.
Well, that's what our culture says for sure. Yeah. I know. That's a hard one. That is a hard one in the culture of doing. Oops, I just lost a mirror pad. Anything else you want us to know before we wind it down?
I think we've covered some ground here, friend.
Yeah. I know. That's why I like to do a long podcast so that we can, I mean, you and I know we could talk for 5 more hours just be easily, but I want
to
make sure
we are, we're going to, right?
Listen, we're nearing 90 minutes, but that's, we're not there yet. I am so grateful, first of all, that I met you, and it's always a pleasure talking to you. I'll for sure put all your stuff in the notes about how people can connect with you. And Gritty Mystic is such an easy way. And kudos, I'm seeing your face on the gram more. So good job. I know that's
thank you.
One of those things. And I know.
Yeah.
Me
be
too.
Seen.
I know. right? Those are the acts of reclamation and healing in a very tangible way. So kudos on that.
Yeah, for
showing
sure.
up, girl.
For sure.
Yeah.
So appreciate you. This has been so much fun. You're definitely a sister and yeah, love this. Value this so much.
Me too. Me too. Next time I got to come to Michigan and hang out. We could even,
yes.
once I get this space that I'm working on, you'll come offer something. We could do something like that. That'd be fun.
Love it. Love it so much.
Working on it. All right. Well, don't sign off, but I'm going to sign off here. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, share it, go like and subscribe, go check out all the cool stuff Tracy's up to and check out her podcast, Gritty Mystic. And again, if you're interested in that retreat or following along on future offerings from me, go to my website and join my mailing list. Thanks, you guys. Hope you have a wonderful day wherever you are and keep shining your light in those corners and recesses of the world that your life touches. It all matters. You matter. Thank you. Bye.